Hey, you listening to this podcast right now. If you want to dip your toe into the lake of somatics and my work and hang out with me and my team in real time, join us in our community somatics sessions. I host these every other month. They are virtual, they are by donation only, and they are accessible to a global audience of bodies that are looking to relate to themselves on a deeper level. It's really quite easy. All you have to do is click on the link, register for free, and during the session, we'll give you an option to donate or not. The choice is yours. Either way, I hope you come and join us.
The next Community Somatics will be held on Tuesday, June 4th at 5 p.m. EDT. The meeting will be an hour long, and if you register, you'll automatically receive a replay after it's concluded.
By the time we got into the room, they had already started the process. So when we had walked in, you know, it's just, we're watching the machines and whatnot. And I walked in and, you know, I'm a spiritual person. And I was like, okay, I get to kind of have a little ritual with her, this like closing ceremony, if you want to say. And I walked in and my friend was there, my mom was there, and we were holding hands, and I just started this prayer and I literally started laughing. I started laughing in this most irreverent, right? This place that you're supposed to be reverent, right? I started laughing and I was like, sis, you don't need any of this, huh?
Welcome to the Holistic Life Navigation Podcast, where we explore life through the lens of somatics. I'm Luis Mojica, a somatic educator who teaches people how to find safety in themselves. Your turn to learn begins now. I'm here with Stephanie Joseph. Welcome to the podcast, finally, my friend.
Thank you, Luis. I'm so happy to be here.
Yeah, it's fun to have you in this seat because you've been in different spaces over the years. So I've gotten to see so much of your process. And I think I wanted to start by bringing the audience back to the moment where you came into my little world and you took my 6-week course. And, you know, in the midst of the course, something really powerful happened in your life, which eventually spawned, I mean, so many things, but also this work you do in the world now. So I just want to start with, take us back, like tell us about the situation as much as you want to share.
Yeah, it's interesting because as soon as you started talking, my body's like, oh, we're going there. We're going there. And I felt it of, it's not a topic that I'll share it with everybody, anybody. So I was introduced to your work in December of 2021. Talking with a new friend online, and she introduced me to the concept of fawning. And I'm like, what's that? And she goes, listen to this episode. And now it's like the gateway. It's what I share to everybody. But I listened to
the gateway drug to HLN.
It is. It really was. It is. And I listened to it and I'm like, what the hell is this? If, you know, and like all these thoughts of like, if I'm not fawning, who am I? And, you know, everything just kind of spiraled. And it happened to be right before you were getting ready to launch a new 6-week program. And she's like, check this out. And of course I did. And I'm really big at listening to my body. At the time, I didn't call it that, but it was like my sacral and, you know, listening to my intuition. And when I started following you, after listening to that podcast episode, I'm like, oh, there's something here. Like that soul, that remembrance, right? That cellular remembrance of this is part of my journey. And so I started your 6-week program. It was the beginning of 2022. I think it was around February, March-ish. And I was new to somatics. I had, you know, like you hear about it, it's kind of, you know, that buzzword. And at that time, it was really starting to get into my awareness a little bit more. I came in from more the spiritual, mystical space. And I was this new student of, oh my gosh, like I can learn all of these pieces of me. So trudging through it, you know, or going, I remember even the, you know, nutrition and all of that. And then one of the last classes that we had, we were leading into May and June. And well, actually, let me backtrack a little bit. So while we were in the class, I ended up losing my job in the first part of May.
I think I knew that.
Yeah, it was really fascinating because I The first time I used somatics to process a traumatic event. I've been with the company for 15 years and kind of knew that there was things happening, but I was always like, I'm safe. I'm kind of like the senior, you know, one of the senior people there. And so I ended up going in on a Monday morning and my boss is like, we have to go for a walk. And I remember looking at him and said, oh, that walk. And he just looked at me and he's like, yeah. So I sat there and I was like, okay, what's going on? And I felt it. So that plays into the big event that happened. So just kind of
I want to pause there.
Yeah.
How'd you navigate that? Ooh. Like what happened, like losing your job midway through the course? What happened for you?
Yeah. So I remember sitting at the table with, you know, the HR and all of the people were talking and I started feeling numb. Like I sat there and I was just watching them and just staring at them, like almost like I'm not here. Mm-hmm. And yet I'm okay. And so I like the meeting was super quick and we got through it. And I kind of I was not surprised in that I'd been doing my own stuff on the side. I'd been in that space of like preparing myself that when it felt time. But I just remember like taking that moment of feeling the numbness and then being like, wait a minute, no, we're learning to do things a little bit differently, right? And because I've learned over these last 6 months that my go-to, I disassociate and I like want to step out of my body.
Yeah.
But I was like, no, I'm actually going to be there and I'm going to sit with it. And I went out to the car. I remember calling my husband and saying, this is happening. And he said, we'll get through this. And I'm like, I know that. And it was a moment of like just literally processing through. It's interesting because I haven't actually explained like the somatic part of processing that, because it was this inner knowing that this was a right step for me, but that I didn't run away from the feelings of like, I'm totally rejected right now. Like I remember feeling completely rejected. And for the next couple of weeks of just being like, they don't want me there. Mm-hmm. They don't want me there. And then also having this weekly class that I get to go sit in and be with you and the other people that are processing life
with those feelings of what's coming up in you, and you get to put them through the practices that I'm teaching.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And did it help you move through it, or did you feel pretty stuck in that?
I was still in the space of like learning, and I got caught up a lot on the language, right?
That because like, it was so new for you. Yeah.
Yeah. And so this language of, you know, like, you know, feeling, and I'm a good student. I will show up to class. I will listen. I will do all my homework. I will pay attention. But I remember getting caught up on the language at that time. So it was, okay, I have this awareness of my body. I want to numb. But I'm going to just be with it. But I do remember getting caught up on the language at that time.
And I just want to freeze that frame because almost 3 years ago. How do you relate to your numbness now in a way that you didn't relate to it then before you had the tools? What's that like when it comes in?
Like just the relating piece has been the biggest part for me of honoring that numbness in itself is a sensation. And that when I start feeling that numbness, it's my body's cue of like, wait, there's actually something here for you to be feeling rather than just saying like, we'll just put that into the bucket of stuff that we don't want to feel.
Yeah. And just for those of you listening, numbness is really the body's way of giving you a break from perceiving all the charge and information and emotion that's there that you don't have capacity to be with in that moment. So it's a protective mechanism. It gives you a little pause. And where we go wrong is we identify with being numb and we identify it as nothingness. But just like you're saying, when you realize, oh, this numbness is a signal, there's a lot here. Let me sit with what's under that. And then all this information emerges. So I'm so glad that still resonates in you.
Yeah, we'll get into, possibly get into like this new awareness around disassociation that I'd love to. Pattern. Yeah, yeah.
So you lose your job, you're working through that, you're working through being embodied within the numbness and dissociation from losing the job. And then this other event comes into your life.
So the end of June, so June 20, 3rd, I got a call from my sister's best friend that she said, you know, I don't know if you know, but your sister's, you know, she's been sick and we're on our way to the hospital. I was like, what? And I knew that she had been sick. Her and I had been talking and, you know, but the last time I checked in with her, it was, I feel like I'm getting better. And so.
What was she sick with?
So she, at the time, we did not know. Well, she was sick with COVID. So we knew COVID was playing a role in it. And she was recovering from COVID. And that's when I had checked in with her. She said, I feel like I'm on the outs of it. I'm in the, you know, recovery stage, but her back was hurting extremely bad. And she had a major headache. And that, you know, in hindsight, now we were able to piece it together. Ultimately, she had bacterial meningitis along with the COVID. And so, but we didn't know that at the time. So they were rushing her to the hospital. She was in an ambulance, and I'm talking through this experience through her best friend. And I'm like, why can I talk to her? And she's like, no, she's kind of like, it was a little bit fuzzy. And that's important because there was something that I had to process through with that. But I'm like, let me just talk to my sister. If I talk to her, everything will be fine. Like if I can just know. And we were never able to speak physically. She got to the hospital around 2 o'clock and went into a coma at 7 that night. Completely unresponsive.
And you're told all this over the phone?
All over the phone. Yes.
And how far are you from this place?
So she was in California and I'm in Utah.
Oh, so, got it. Okay.
Yeah. It wasn't, you know, just a jump. And at the time it was like, oh, okay. She's just in the hospital. We'll be talking soon. Mm-hmm. I did remember a part of me, my sister-in-law had mentioned something about bacterial meningitis, and I Googled it because that's, you know, what we do. You go check it out. And I'm like, oh, backache, headache. I completely like dismissed the severity of what bacterial meningitis mm-hmm. is because I've never mm-hmm. been exposed to it, right? Never mm-hmm. had the experience of it. And I was actually at my son's baseball game when all of this news and the, you know, like we're just figuring out, we don't have answers. So when you're dealing with a traumatic brain injury, they're in complete, like, we're just going to get her stable.
Yeah,
we're going to get her in that space that we can then go for answers.
Yeah. And so what's happening in your body while you're told one moment she's going to the hospital and then the follow up is she's in a coma? Like, what's happening for you in that moment?
So I was at the baseball field and I remember I was actually coach and I'm like, oh, wait, I don't actually have to coach right now. There's other people here. And so I stepped aside and was talking to her friend, like on and off. And then I remember just sitting there and that numbness, that interesting, like now, like that we started that conversation, it was, okay, and I loved how you just explained that because it was this part of me, like all of this charge was happening in my body and I didn't know what to do with it.
Exactly.
And so I just like, I pushed it down and be like, okay, we need to go into figure out mode. Like, I essentially took on mom role and went into figure this out to, okay, what do we need to do to survive for her, to survive for all of that?
And just so everyone knows, you know, this is our typical kind of crisis of survival response where there's not enough time to sit in your feelings and to organize or express or even relate to what's happening. We have this idea with embodiment that we're supposed to, in all these really big experiences in life, just be grounded. And sometimes the body doesn't allow you to connect to what you're feeling because it's too much to process in that moment. So then this is why the numbness is such a benevolent gift in these situations, because it numbs you so you can function and make phone calls and move and talk and make different decisions that normally you'd be too overwhelmed to make if you felt all the charge and emotion that was under that numbness. Mm-hmm. So the numbness supported you to move forward and do what you needed to do. Well, what did you end up doing?
So that night when she finally went in the coma, they then had to, you know, protocols and go to the person that can make decisions on her behalf because she didn't have a directive or anything. And so I was on the phone probably every 5 to 15 minutes, somebody was calling to get permission. We're going to be drilling into her head. We're going to be trying this medication. And thankfully she was at a phenomenal hospital that they literally threw the medical book at her of just making, you know, going through it. But, you know, to get phone calls of all of these things that you've never, ever, never like heard these terms before. And I remember just, you know, jotting down notes of like, okay, yeah. I don't remember everything. Like, how am I to make this decision? And the thing that really supported me in that time is that I was only making one decision at a time. That when the information was presented, it was making a decision. And I, like, there was other people that were involved in the conversation, but I was the one that was directly communicating with the hospital staff. And it took until probably about 3 a.m. So, you know, from just give time frame from 7 p.m. to 3 a.m., we're getting to her to a space that, okay, she's stable. And we're going to just kind of now at that point of waiting and seeing.
Mm-hmm. And then what happened next?
So once they got her stable, because COVID was involved, and at that time, so think back 2022 in California, there was still a lot of protocols around visitors and whatnot. And so they told us just kind of stand by where she's stable. There's nothing that can happen. And I just even remember, like, even saying that word, I'm all, who gets to say what's stable? Like, here she, you know, like, this is not a stable way for my sister. But it was okay. She's fine. She's okay. But we had to wait a couple of days for them to be able to open up and decide that the time that she had got COVID was pretty much out of her system. And so they did open up for visitors to come. And so that was on a Thursday, Saturday morning. I got on a plane and flew to California to go see her.
Mm-hmm. Oof. What are you feeling right there when you say that? What happens in your body?
Just the moment of walking into the room. And, you know, her friend had called me when I was at the airport, and she said, I don't think you can ever prepare yourself to see what you're going to see. And so I want to give you the option. Do you want to hop on a phone call, you know, video call, and just prepare yourself? And so we did that. And still even having that, the vision of her completely hooked up to everything, to walk into that room, that's what I just felt in my body, of walking into that room and seeing Foley head, you know, obviously, like, she was intubated and, you know, wires and everything. I mean, my sister was 37 years old, beautiful, healthy, like, this wasn't her, right? And but to walk in that room and see her in that state, so, like, I just instantly went there of, oh, we're doing this, is what I remember, we're doing this.
I've been with loved ones in that state. I know that feeling of suddenly seeing them. It's this transformation where they're not there, their body's there, but it's a form of their body you've never even seen before. And it's fascinating. And the way you would expect to be able to relate to them isn't accessible. Hmm. So there's already this grieving, at least for me, in those situations that set in, where there's already a loss of how we connect, how we co-regulate, how we see each other. And so you're walking in, you're seeing that, and then what unfolded?
Yeah, so I was able to be down there with her for 10 days. The first few days, they were still trying to figure out what was the cause of everything. She did have multiple strokes in her brainstem. And, you know, hearing from the doctors that, you know, what is, you know, her, what would be her, what was the term that they use? State, her, like, living, you know, the,
It's okay. You can use whatever word you want.
Yeah. But they were, you know, just, traumatic brain injuries, what we're doing is we're waiting to see what the body's doing, right? She's had the strokes in her brainstems. The brainstem is the control center of the whole body, right? They had her sedated on pain pills or pain medication. So for the first couple of days, we were just in that space of waiting and seeing. No movement at all from her. And I love that you brought in the idea that when you walk in and see your loved one in this state, that you would never imagine them be there, but here they are. It was pretty quickly on that the somatic piece came in, where I can't process this situation in front of me any other way than how I am doing it, than who I am and how I perceive this. And so the first time we had some time alone, I sat with her and I was like, sis, because She's in a coma. So, you know, I would talk to her this way and I was like, sis, here we are. Okay. You know more than the doctors. You know more than me, anybody here. What is it that you want us to support you? And how do you want me to support you in this time? And we found out within a couple of days of bacterial meningitis. And I mean, they came in with their full hazmat suit and we're like, we're a little underdressed here in this hospital as they're all, you know, fully dressed up. And just, you know, found out that that was the cause of it. And it's still at that point, it was like, we're just going to wait and see to find her, find out what her body, like the damage that was done. And can she ultimately, quality of life? That's what I was trying to think of earlier. There, you know, what is the quality of life that your sister would be willing to accept? And I remember sitting in that room and we had, you know, the big family meeting and we're talking to the doctors and they said that. And I was like, what do you mean quality of life? Like my sister was a world traveler. She had just gotten back from Scotland. You know, she had got her MBA in Scotland and she, her quality of life was living, like truly like to be in that state forever. No, that's not quality of life. And, you know, they said, well, we, you know, it comes to a point where there is decisions that can be made of, you know, what that means. And so we, at that time, we're just like, okay, we'll be at that wait and see. And literally allowing her body to do what it needed to do. Within about, it was about 5 days that we started seeing some movement in her arms. With the pupils, they, that's, you know, the first place that they check, with what's going on with the brain. And we did start seeing some movements and I remember like sitting on her bedside and this is where the somatic piece was really big for me is that here I'm witnessing her body in a state that I never expected it to be. And I could hold her physically, like be holding her hand, touching her, and be feeling some, like, all the things that were going on of like the pressures of, you know, decision-making, the anticipatory grief, like that is the one thing that I never really understood that of, you know, it was a total of 5 weeks of her being in the coma and then she ultimately passed away. But that anticipating like, okay, we're seeing movement. Oh, wait, but then quality of life keeps coming up. Like, so is her movement going to be, is she wheelchair bound? Like all of these things that you're just playing out, like these possible scenarios. And again, not knowing what any of what the potentially the outcome would be.
Hey, my friends, I created a space that is affordable, accessible, and anyone is allowed to join anytime. And it's called the Library Membership. The Library Membership is an online private platform that hosts dozens of my webinars, my somatic practices, private mini lectures, and movement practices. There's also a monthly sound healing, and you'll be invited to a weekly Tuesday live mini practice with me and other participants. You'll also be invited to be a live audience member in our monthly HLN team podcast recordings, where you'll take place in the Q&A that happens off-air after the episode is filmed. For more information on this membership, click on the link below, or go to holisticlifenavigation.com and click on Membership and then Library. You can join right now, and you can cancel or pause your subscription at any time. I look forward to seeing you in there.
And what was it like when the outcome was her passing? How did that show up in terms of her body stopped or she was taken off life support? Or what was that like for you to be in that experience?
Yeah. So while she was in the main hospital for 4 of the 5 weeks. And at that time they were, you know, still like, it's like life-saving, right? They're making sure that they do everything to save her life. And then there was conversations that ultimately we can move her to long-term care and, you know, have a different way of taking care of her. Ultimately her body actually started shutting down. And this is, I'm actually writing a book of our journey because this, you know, there's miracles in these moments. Death is not something I'm new to. This wasn't my first experience with death, but I remember having a conversation with her and said, sis, you make the choice and whatever your choice is, I will support you in it. I will support you if you want to stay and we go through this path of rehabilitation, whatever that looks like. I will support you if it's time to go. And we saw like all of the reactions happening. And I truly believe it was her coming into her body. Cause there was times where I sit with her and I could feel her physically mm-hmm. in her body. Mm-hmm. Right. And then there was times where she was out. But I said, you know, I remember sitting with her and I said, make your choice. And if possible, can you make it so easy on us so that we don't have to, I mean, there's always going to be a little bit of guilt and what ifs and, you know, did I make the right mm-hmm. choices? But I said, can you make it as easy as possible? And Louise, she did. Like it, she came in, was feeling her arms out, you know, and she never got movement in her legs. And I really like truly believe that she was feeling into it. And she's like, you know what, screw this. Like, I'm not going to be wheelchair bound the rest of my life. I'm not, mm-hmm. you know? And so from that point, when we only saw the responses from her upper body, I do believe that she allowed herself to rest. And it was a slow, you know, we started getting word that, you know, different organs weren't working that well. And then, you know, they ultimately moved her to the other facility, which it was insurance driven because a lot of our medical decisions, I learned through this experience, how much insurance drives those medical decisions. But we transferred
I want to just back up a minute because you said something about you felt like she came into her body and there were these mm-hmm. times when she was unconscious, you could feel her presence there and then times you couldn't. And I really believe that, you know, I'm thinking of when my first grandmother that passed away, she was also in a coma. And I remember going in to see her and my aunt saying to me, I'm going to leave the room so you have some time alone with her. And I hadn't moved to New York City at this time. They were still in Pennsylvania. So, you know, weeks had gone by since I'd seen her. And I said, hey, Grandma, I'm here. Just came here to see you. And she woke up out of her coma and turned toward me. And her eyes filled with these watery tears. This big smile came across her face. And she just gazed at me and like opened her mouth but couldn't speak. And then closed her eyes. And that was the last time, you know, she was awake and conscious. But it was this really magical moment of seeing her inhabit her body for 5 or 10 seconds to have this gorgeous kind of like last connection, because she had already connected with everyone else before going into her coma, but not me because I had moved away. Mm-hmm. We had a really close relationship. And I remember that moment when she was moved into another unit, when she started actively dying, which was a long death. It wasn't mm-hmm. quick. And it was graphic and it was long. And I remember sitting with her for these days and days and days that was going by with my family, like 24-hour shifts, you know, it was going in and out. And I could feel her not being there anymore. And it was my deepest introduction to death mm-hmm. because I could feel how she had already left the building of her body. And her body was now going through its own ritual of turning off, essentially. And it felt so peaceful and impersonal and not scary, even though it was so graphic and intense on so many levels. It felt so peaceful because she wasn't there. I wasn't watching her suffer to death. She had left the building. I almost mm-hmm. think after she smiled and went back into her coma, you know, okay, I'm gone. I've seen all my family. I'm ready. And I wonder when you look back on the experience, because you were there for weeks. And I remember in the course you writing on the circle space, like, I've been gone for weeks because this happened and now I'm here to process some of it. I think you did the membership or some kind of ongoing work, something, because I remember you were talking about it. What did that teach you about death? I'm assuming it's mm-hmm. the closest person you lost and like the most shocking, you know, at this point in your life. Would that be an appropriate assumption or not?
My father passed away, but it wasn't like this.
Yeah, I would imagine. Yeah. So what did you learn about death? What did it teach you?
I learned that, you know, death truly is not the end.
Learn that though? Like, what did you feel? Yeah. Tell me, I want to know about that. Because I did too, but what did that for you?
Yeah, so it felt, I guess the best way to explain it was the process of her leaving, because I did have a day mm-hmm. where I knew 100% that she left. I left, mm-hmm. left the building. We were there up until the point that she moved to this new location. And then when we got her there to this new location, seeing her in it, I had some trauma around the building itself and the situation, but watching her body and the peace that she was in, mm-hmm. It was this moment, like, I get to finally just rest, guys.
That's
like,
when she passed already?
Not yet. She was still there. Nice. She's still there. And, like, I have pictures of her, the most peaceful she looked in this whole time. That it, like, looking back, I'm like, okay, that was the time where, like, because here she was in the regular hospital getting checked every hour, doing like all of that. She had a dedicated nurse. And this facility was a place where she got to rest. She got to just be. And we had scheduled a call with the facility, just do FaceTime, because I was back home. It was July 22nd. And we had a call scheduled. And I remember looking at the video and I'm like, she's not there. I'm talking to her and I, like, there was nothing. Because again, her, we never saw her eyes besides a few tweaks, right? Or twitches. But I'm like, she's not there. And then that night I was in the shower. This is one of my favorite parts of the story, but I was in the shower and I said, Jen, just show me where you're at. Just show me. And I closed my eyes and I literally just saw a picture of her and she was smiling and she said, I'm happy. I'm happy, sis. And she was, there were some yellow flowers behind her in the picture. And then within minutes, her friend had texted me and she said, here's a picture of a tattoo that Jen wanted to get, you know, just a conversation. And I was like, it was some flowers. And I'm like, interesting. I just had this vision of Jen in a field of flowers saying she was happy. And she goes, what, like this? And she forwarded me a picture of Jen they had taken with her and these flowers. And a dove came that day. But it, like, I knew in that moment that she had left the building. And the doctors were confirming it from the body standpoint. We were losing the brain activity. They were going to do an EEG the following week. And, you know, talking to nurse friends and, like, you know, you can get second opinions. And I was like, okay, we'll do that. But we planned to go fly back because we knew it was time. And just these, like I said, she made it so we knew. And I felt like, honestly, this, you know, this conductor that's doing this orchestra, right? And he's like, okay, you play over here, the drums over here, that just the doctors that she orchestrated for us to have, the nurse Peggy, that was just something else. But the most pivotal point for me of realizing this part, that death is not the end, right? So this is something I haven't publicly shared, that we ended up taking her off of life support. And we had it scheduled. We knew it was happening a certain day. And there was things that happened in the hospital or this place that she was staying that wasn't allowing us to get into the room. And by the time we got into the room, they had already started the process. So when we had walked in, you know, it's just, we're watching the machines and whatnot. And I walked in and, you know, I'm a spiritual person, and I was like, okay, I get to kind of have a little ritual with her, this like closing ceremony, if you want to say. And I walked in and it was my friend was there, my mom was there, and we were holding hands, and I just started this prayer and I literally started laughing. I started laughing in this most irreverent, right? This place that you're supposed to be reverent, right? I started laughing and I was like, sis, you don't need any of this, huh? And I literally just had this overwhelming feeling that she just was like, if you need it, Steph, go for it. If you need to do this. Yeah. But I don't need this. And because I was like, I'm going to unshackle you from your body and all of this. And literally like, that's what
I love this, because there's so many times in my life and with the work I've done with people where the so much of what we do around people's suffering and pain and death is so much for us more than it is for them.
It is.
And I love how you're going in there thinking you have to unshackle her where she's already gone.
She's already free and
dancing in the cosmos.
Yeah.
Well, I'm curious then, this happens, you have this experience, then as you start integrating it, because you joined our practitioner group, one of the slow groups, and you were sharing how this whole experience informed your, not just opinion on death, but your desire to work more closely with grief and with death. So how did this propel you into working with people? What did that look like around that? Because you were already a coach at this point.
Yes, I was already coaching, and I ended up naturally sharing my story on my social media, just processing through this grief, realizing how, like, you know, people talk, they don't know how to talk about grief. They're, you know, we as a society, we don't, you know, let me know if you need anything, but then nobody shows up, you know. So I was just naturally just sharing the journey of it. And it became this healing part for me to be able to talk about it. And so in the practitioner group, I had decided that I was going to launch a podcast called Moving Grief. And the whole premise was to move my grief, right? To bring people on, share stories of their loss and grief. And I remember in one of the classes, I'm like, grief transformed me to live. And we, you know, like, so at the time I'm like, okay, I can shift my coaching to be in that space of grief and supporting people in grief. Cause it was just natural for me to talk about it. And it was so, you know, obviously it was a daily thing and it still is 2 years later of like, there's not a day, a moment that goes by that she's not a part of my experience. Right. And so I started this podcast and was doing some things. And then through the practitioner group, like meeting every month and just being in that space and the beautiful questions you had and the practices that we'd go through. I remember you made a post about how grief keeps us connected to our loved ones. And I literally was like, fuck you, Luis. No, that's not true. And I was walking and I remember saying, it was the first time I saw something of yours that I was like, he doesn't know what he's talking about. That's not my experience. Okay, thanks, next. And I was walking and I was like, wait, because I love curiosity. That's how I live my life. I'm like, wait a minute. Is this grief the connection that's holding me to her? So I started talking to her, which I do a lot. And I was like, sis, is this? And I just literally started bawling. And I remembered one of our last conversations we had. She lived with me for a few months before moving back to California. And she was like asking me what I do with people and, you know, telling them all the yada yada. And she's like, so you're a coach. And I'm like, nope, I'm not a coach. I denied that term. I didn't want to be called a coach. And so she's like, okay, just explain to me again what you do. And she's like, Stephanie, you're a fucking coach. Just own it. And I literally remembered that, like everything in my whole body lit up. And I'm like, you're a coach. And the grief piece informs your work, but it doesn't have to be everything. It doesn't have to be all of it. And I just remember, like, literally, I was like, so I can honor you more by actually inspiring people to live and inspiring them to move through their grief, to allow their grief to be a part of their experience, to feel it when it comes through. But what if I can actually support people in living and embracing life? Because if I truly believe that death is not the end, then why would this experience end my living?
That's right. That's right. I really appreciate that because I find that when we allow death to really work its way through us, it does just that. It manifests how amazing life is. And for me, I feel even more alive, you know, when I experience and relate to death, when I'm avoiding death, when I'm pushing it away, when I'm judging it, when I'm saying it shouldn't have happened, I'm arguing with it. But when I see it for what it is, it creates this incredible gratitude for being alive. And even this preciousness of the, especially in this case, when it's so shocking, you know, when it's someone who's elderly or they're sick for a while, you're kind of preparing. When it's so sudden, there was no preparation. And that's the beauty of life, is it's all impersonal. There's no preparation. It comes when it comes. And how do I relate to it when it comes? And so I guess I wonder, we have a little time left. What's it like when you feel, imagine, I should say, because it's interesting that you found this. It's amazing for me to talk with people that do the course, because there are so many people that do it. I don't know what they're going through individually, unless, you know, a couple of them share it. And it's amazing to think that you find this thing right when you need to find it. And I wonder for you, what is it like to live like post loss and grief with somatic embodiment? What's it like to have that skill set and move with, like you call it moving grief, move with it? What does that even mean for you?
It means that I get to feel it all. With my dad passed away in 2014, and I didn't realize it at the time how much I disassociated and didn't want to feel. Life just goes on, right? Dad was older, but it still was unexpected. We had 9 weeks with him when we knew he had cancer, but I disassociated and didn't want to feel it. And now feeling not only her death and the loss, but now feeling like the living that comes from it, that knowing that at any given moment, our life can change, right? That our life, like nothing is promised. And the one thing that we all share in common is death, right? That we will all experience death. And yet it's still so hard for a lot of people to talk about, or like you said, like, if you want to pull away from it, you're actually not going to receive. Like, for me, living somatically and being, I'm so, so grateful that it was there for me when I went through this, the actual traumatic event, to be present with it, right? And then the aftermath of it, in that I get to feel it all. I get to feel the tenderness. You know, when the conflict in the Middle East broke out, and I'm like, holy shit, I did not realize any of this stuff was going on. I've been numb to all of this, that I actually get to feel the tenderness. And, you know, Jen was my person in my life that would be like, Stephanie, wake up. Like, not everything is sunshine and rainbows. Like, people are hurting. People are suffering. Like, wake up. And I remember having this moment. I'm like, I can't call my sister to ask her. And I'm like, okay, well, then feel what this tenderness is. Mm-hmm. Feel what 40 years has been like, where you got to ignore things outside of yourself. And like, this tenderness piece, I know I've said it a few times, like, it's been really, really big for me. And like, her death showed me truly what loving is. Mm-hmm. And that we can connect. So I remember, like, you know, I had parts of me would be like, oh, I don't want to sit with people in their shit, because that means that I'm going to take it on, right? That bypassing crap. And I realized it. I'm like, no, I'll sit with you. I can be there with you. I don't have to take it on, but I can be with you. Right. I won't walk away stinking, right? I won't walk away, but I can be with you, because life sucks sometimes.
Well, I find what you're saying, I find it liberating of feeling it all. It's very liberating, because if there's a feeling I don't want to experience, mm-hmm. I'm shackled by the fear of when that feeling might enter my body, or when I might be confronted with someone else's body who feels it and I don't have space for it. But when I can feel everything, and mm-hmm. feeling everything and witnessing everything and empathizing is very different from being flooded by it. Like you said, it's very different from being completely hijacked by someone else's experience. I can feel you as you talk about your sister, and I can feel my seat and know it's not my experience, it's yours. And it's a beautiful pendulation to somatically empathize with you and return to my reality, so I don't get lost in your experience, because I do no service to anyone when I get lost in their experience. I really appreciate you coming on and talking about your sister and your experience and how somatics guided you through it and continue to. And I'll put information in the episode details for people to reach out to you and to find your work. Anyone that's trying to navigate grief or loss and wants to move with it and wants it to enliven them might want to reach out to you and play with you.
Yeah, thank you.
That's the end of today's episode. Now let's take a moment to notice where we feel the episode in our bodies. Close your eyes. Take a breath. And let whatever wants to come up, come up. And remember, those sensations hold the wisdom that we're looking for. If you want to go deeper, visit holisticlifenavigation.com.
Hello, everybody. It is the time of year to begin registering for one or two of my slow groups that begin in July. My slow groups are these special groups where I focus on one topic and we deeply unpack it over the course of 6 months. So these are highly nuanced, deep dive, advanced groups. These are excellent for those of you who have taken my 6-week course or who just want to focus on one particular topic through a somatic and trauma-informed lens. The two that are opening up in July, or will begin in July, are my embodied parenting group and my embodied nutrition group. The embodied parenting group is just like it sounds, learning how to parent from your body, learning how to ground yourself in your parenting so you're not parenting from a reactive, triggered place, but from a much more conscious place, so you can actually find joy in your parenting instead of it being a total hellscape, like some of you have told me it is, and I've experienced it myself. The other group is an embodied nutrition group. This has been requested for years. For the past 4 years, after students complete my course, they say, can you please do a course on nutrition and make it longer than 6 weeks? So finally, I can say, yes, you can. And I can. And I did. It is a 6-month unpacking of the intersection between trauma, nutrition, and somatics. How do we recover from stress and trauma via food? How do we relate to food as a being and not just some object on the plate? What's the biochemistry of food? Why is it not the best for my blood sugar to have toast, but lentils are just fine if they're both carbohydrates? All of this and more will be unpacked in this 6-month group. To register for these groups, please go to my website, holisticlifenavigation.com, and click groups. Or you can click the link in the episode details below. Registration closes on June 1st. It is only open through May because we need the month of June to prepare everybody for July. I'm looking forward to this deep dive with you all. I'll see you there.